All right, I just chain smoked 3 cigarettes all at once.
Good.
Can you imagine? One here, one here, one right here.
Like one off the other.
McConaughey.
Coffee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, what a downer. I can't think of an Art of Darkness episode we've done that has been so much a downer, as much of a downer in terms of the work.
Right. Yeah.
His life was a LARP.
It's true. It's true.
It's a nice contrast. It's,
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't mind his, I wouldn't have minded his life. Sounds kind of lonely, but definitely.
Many people are not really that far off though, especially now. And that's something I made a note of that in the Google Doc that isolation is something that is much more often nowadays imposed, although it's different again with the being able to reach out to people and talk incessantly, but still the physical isolation, the atomization that has been imposed by this
social
economic model.
Yeah, you see these things where like people have, you know, fewer friends than they've ever had before.
People are getting married, extended families are shrinking, the family itself is disintegrating.
Yeah.
All of that. And people certainly don't have the inner or intellectual resources of a philosopher, but they have streaming services. They have more entertainment to distract themselves.
Well, go ahead, Kevin.
Patreon, we love you. Thank you. Thank you for supporting the pod. Keep coming back. Get ready for the book club. We have the Eyes Wide Shut watch party coming up. Get in the Telegram if you're not already. Thank you. Brad, take it away.
I wanted to spend some time and talk a little bit more about Caleb's work. So you kind of described The Neighbor to us. What can you tell us about the process of writing that, or where the inspiration for it came? What's the story of the story there?
The story of the story is, it is very loosely based on my time living in a particular neighborhood in Indianapolis. And I lived between two drug dealers. I moved into a neighborhood that was, like many streets in many urban settings, is unevenly developed. So there are newer homes where affluent people live, and there are also more dilapidated homes where people who are going in the opposite direction historically have been living. And I lived between these two. I lived in a more recently renovated home between two drug dealers, one of whom was murdered in his home. I don't know if I was there or not, but while it happened, but I'd learned that this is what had happened at some point.
Wow.
And many of the characters and the descriptions are based on my observations of the people coming and going. And there would be people who would come to my door sometimes thinking that they were next door, one of the other next doors. And I don't know how exactly I came up with the idea to vary the chapters the way I did, going back and forth in time. I think it was mostly, for me, it was a matter of making it more readable and more fluid. And I actually thought making the chapters short and going back and forth in time is more suitable to the modern attention span in a way. And every chapter, in a sense, even though there's a central event, there's a robbery, there's a robbery that's gone awry. And so the mystery is not what has happened or who has done it. You figure that out pretty quickly, but it's more so a matter of figuring out how this central event arises, how you get to the point. I just saw so much destitution and squalor and desperation around me. And I grew up in a fairly comfortably middle class home, but that was always around me. I was never too very far from it at the same time. And it seemed that the way that the people who that I lived around, the way they lived was under chronicled.
Right.
It's a demographic and a social and economic class that is very easily and quickly maligned, but very poorly understood and almost not sympathized with at all.
Oh, worse, actively reviled.
Or even, actively reviled, lampooned, mocked, scorned, situated at the center of everything that's wrong with the modern world. And so I wanted to do something, and still I have a fairly satirical bent in general. So there are satirical facets to what I was doing, but I also sometimes I think like pure satire is extremely limited. And if you're satirizing people with whom you have no sympathy or understanding whatsoever, it's very cold. And it's also, and you date yourself very quickly too, because when political and social and economic fortunes change, then it loses relevance.
Right.
So I wanted to take something that was satirical and had that satirical inclination, but also inject a broader human interest into it.
Right. Right. Very cool. Very cool. And so are you working on a book now? Or are you working on a longer?
Yeah. Well, I've two or three, really. I have just completed a collection of short stories.
Oh, cool.
I've sent that out now. And I'm sure as you guys know, that's a waiting game.
Oh God. Yeah.
Publishers. I might just publish it myself too. I'm extremely impatient also. And that's maybe a product of the age, but also sometimes it's funny how you see people online, writers, they don't have their own site, they don't have their own Substack, or they don't have a blog, and they'll make a big deal out of being accepted at various magazines.
Yeah.
I was rejected 20 times and now and it gets kind of twee and a little in a way where it's like my little work found a home here. And,
right.
But I always think like, just hit submit.
Yeah.
You create your own and then you can put it out. And then
my new rule, I made a rule for myself a couple of years ago, is I don't submit anything short pieces. I don't submit anything unless I'm friends with somebody there.
Yeah.
There's no, there's like, who cares?
I think that's the only, I think if you know people, that's cool. But otherwise, why bother? If you're going to get attention for what you're doing, you're going to do it through a WordPress or a Substack or else it's probably not going to work out.
Yeah. We just put out a screenplay. I've written 4 feature length screenplays with a writing partner of mine, Abby Lucas, who came on and did the Bolaño episode with us many months ago, which was the most popular episode of the year. I think, just in terms of Spotify anyway. And we just... Pickleball is very hot right now, right? The sport, pickleball. Our script is called Pickleball. It's about pickleball.
You were ahead of the curve.
We were. And so we just said, well, it's really about boomers and millennials and zoomers and intergenerational conflict. It's a comedy. So we just said, fuck it. We're going to put this out on Amazon. So if you go to my website, you can find it through my Twitter, which is Couchmania. It's there. It's on Amazon. Yeah. Are we going to sell 1,000 copies? Probably not. But... Yeah. You don't know what might happen. And a novel's different, right? People, it's a weird thing to read a screenplay, but a novel or a book of short stories, you could do some numbers.
Yeah. That's where I am. I'm going to give everyone about another month maybe. And then if I don't hear anything or I don't hear what I like, I'm going to do it myself.
I hear you, man. I've got a book I'll be done with next year sometime, hopefully in the first half of next year. And then I'm thinking like, I would like to get it published, in the largest capacity I can. Right. But like, it's also like, do I want to wait till 2020? Like, even if somebody did say, hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's still 2024, 2025 before it's actually out.
We're talking here. We're not talking about Penguin. We're talking much smaller presses. It's still a backlog.
Right. So it's like, man, do I really want to wait that long? Like, So there's a bit of a game there for sure. And right now is a pretty exciting time for publishing anyway.
You also the short story collection, it's important to me. I want to get it out, but then I'm already looking ahead a little bit. I want to get it out of the way because I really want to focus in on the next novel that I've already started it. It's a Midwestern gangster story. I'm also, my guilty pleasure in a way is I'm very into crime dramas and like Scorsese movies, Francis Ford Coppola, Godfather, all of the Michael Mann movies, Heat, Thief. So I want to take the gangster story and set it in the Midwest. And I've got some pretty solid ideas for that. And I want that next novel.
Yo, I live in St. Paul. I live in Crookshaven. We're the the epicenter of all that stuff. Nothing changes. Nothing changes.
Yeah. It's all very simple.
Do you still have time, Caleb, to get into the remainder of the Turan business for a few minutes, or are you winding down?
I think I probably have to take my leave.
That's cool.
All good. Right. These are like a full day of work, and so we're so grateful that you joined us, and thank you for sharing that bit about your own writing. And I hope people will go and find you. And if there's now you're part of the Art of Darkness family, if there's ever a guest we do a core episode, and you go David Foster Wallace, you let us know, you come on. And the Dark Room episodes are only 90 minutes of a commitment, so it's a little less intense, but you're welcome anytime.
That sounds great. It's been a great time. Thanks guys for having me on.
Sure. And if we can ever help you promote anything or anything, you just let me know or let us know.
Brad awesome. And I got it from here. We've all done right. a bit all of right. this
all right man. thanks
guys. Again
talk to you soon.
Later.
Yep. Bye.
Oh man. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool guy.
That nice. Was great. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. So we promised we were going to talk about Turan and the Nazis. So
my grandpa killed a bunch of Nazis in the war.
Let me find I got a note about what page I'm reading from here.
Oh man. Yeah. Okay. You, that was a sprawling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cornucopia of darkness and depression.
Yeah. We went a little heavy on excerpts there, but honestly, I think you kind of need to for him because he's got such a style and such a vibe. And also some of his stuff is so kind of pithy, but it's like, do you want to describe what he's talking about, or do you just want to read the five sentences? You know, it's
100%. I know. I dig it. Yeah. This is one that I will listen back to. Yeah. I don't always listen back to it for obvious reasons. I've done it. Yeah, it's a lot of time. I was there.
Yeah. If you listen to all of them, you're basically spending all of your time either making a podcast or listening to the podcast.
I have children. I have normie work and everything.
So, okay. So, there was apparently in the 1930s, Turan wrote 46 articles that were published in various periodicals. This is, I think this is in his Berlin time. So we're going to read some of this one. Okay. This is, this was in a magazine or a newspaper or something called Vremya, which apparently means the Times, published 15th of July, 1934. This is Turan's words. There's no politician today who inspires me with a greater sympathy and admiration than Hitler.
Hey.
There is something irresistible in the destiny of this man for whom every act of his life gains significance only through a symbolic participation in the historical destiny of a nation. For Hitler is a man who does not have what is called a private life. Since the war, his life has been nothing but renunciation and sacrifice. A politician's lifestyle gains depth only when the desire for power and an imperialistic will to conquer are accompanied by a great capacity for self-restraint. The Führer's mystique in Germany is totally justified. I would say the mystique can be justified, right? I mean, even those who imagine themselves to be Hitler's passionate adversaries who claim to hate him are in reality caught in the waves of this mystique, which has turned Hitler's personality into a myth. When Rome's conspiracy, I don't know what that is, R-O-E-H-M, Rome's conspiracy took place and nothing official was yet known, I encountered many of those who only in the day before did not hesitate to deprecate Hitler, now exclaiming, quote, if only Hitler were unharmed. Okay, I'm going to read
that. It was Ernst Röhm. And he was a German military officer, an early member of the Nazi party. As one of the members of its predecessors, he was a close friend of Adolf Hitler. By 1934, the German army feared the Sturmabteilung, or the storm units, the Nazi party militia. They feared their influence, and Hitler had come to see Rome as a potential rival. So he was executed during the night of the long knife.
Okay.
He was a rival to Hitler's power.
Right, right. Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Reading a little bit further down in this piece. As far as Hitler is concerned, the capacity to seduce is even more impressive since it is not aided by an expressive physiognomy. His face expresses nothing but energy and sadness because it needs to be known. Because it needs to be known, Hitler is a sad man, a sadness that is the result of too much seriousness. This is characteristic of the entire German people, a desperately serious people compared to whom Latin nations are nations of clowns. Okay, just a little bit further. Those who have reservations about Hitler refer to his lack of culture, as if one needed to quote Goethe in each discourse in order to be able to rule a nation. What counts is an infinite vibration of the soul, a will for an absolute fulfillment in history, an intense exaltation bordering on the absurd, an irrational drive to sacrifice your life. We must admit that this great tension is present to a certain extent in the dictatorships of Europe today. In order to become a major power, such attention is necessary. One must seriously wonder whether small nations could possibly make a leap forward without a dictatorship. Okay, here's a little bit more. The Catholic opposition is indeed strong. Since the Pope forbade young Catholics to become members of Hitler's Jugend, is that how you say that, Jugend, or is it like
Jugend?
Oh, yeah, Jugend. The Hitler Jugend. The Hitlerists' reaction and pressure led to a severe conflict with the Catholics. The Bavarians, who are Catholic and extremely religious, if faced with a choice between Catholicism and National Socialism, would not hesitate one moment before they chose their religious convictions.
Goddamn right.
Yeah, Hitler nevertheless.
Those are my people, Bavarian Catholics. That's where we go back to. Oh, yeah.
Right on.
Rattling my beads here.
Yeah, yeah. Hitler nevertheless.
The one true faith.
It's true. Hey, man. Hey, they would kept people from becoming Nazis. So
hey, well, all right.
Something to it. Mm. Hitler nevertheless means much more to the German people than some Pope who interferes in the internal affairs of a people in the name of Christianity, which, trivialized by politics, calls itself Catholicism. This is my last little bit here. Hitler has poured a fiery passion into political fights and has breathed a messianic spirit into a whole set of values which democratic nationalism had rendered dull and trivial. We all need such mystique, as we are all sick of so many truths from which no flames ever spring forth.
He wrote this when he was a young man, so it must have been in his in the 30s.
It was 1934, so he would have been 23. Right. So.
I wonder if Rome had been rounded up. I wonder if the Night of the Long Knives had happened yet.
It was that year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might have been. So, he's it's certainly early on. I mean, this is pre-Holocaust and stuff.
Went on Alex Jones.
Yeah.
And then he
wore a mask.
Oh, wow. Yeah, man. Yeah. Sheesh.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we keep. That was interesting reading that, and then that Kanye West thing happening at the same time, being like, man, some stuff just doesn't really change. Like
nothing.
You know, yeah,
changes.
Yeah,
it is. It's staggering that a figure such as the Austrian corporal could still provoke that reaction.
He's become like a mythical figure in a way.
Yeah,
that's not a
modern secular religion has made him the ultimate. That name is the Lord Voldemort of contemporary life.
Right.
Yeah,
and so because of that, it becomes a black hole that sucks a lot of stuff into it. This is kind of the way that I think about it. Right, it's like if you're enough of a contrarian, if you're a contrarian enough, eventually Hitler starts to you start to be in the Hitler gravitational field.
The HGF.
Yeah. And this is not to say, I mean, this is all, I'm glad this is on Patreon. This is none of this is pray any of it.
Of course. Yeah.
I felt like it was important. You can't tell the Chiron story without telling this part of it.
He was part of a fascist organization in Romania, and the Romanians, I think, they almost kicked off the pogroms. Particularly vehement in their anti-Semitic and in their business around that. And that's not to be forgotten. Very intense.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I don't know if that's, you wonder too, it's sort of like it probably, yeah, the whole anti-Semitic thing, it shows up differently depending on what sort of the proportional populations there are, you know, if there aren't really any, you know, I don't know. There's all kinds of social and historical dynamics, I think, that would flavor how a country handle, you know,
How did this guy manage to not work? Did that woman throw him money? Did he just get bit by bits and bobs?
Yeah, I assumed that she did. I think once by the 60s, he was selling enough books to probably make a meager living. I mean, right. His books were published by a publisher. So.
And it's worth remembering, too, Paris was not, the cities had not yet become the impossibly overpriced.
Right.
Insane places that they are now. And so one can imagine a scenario where as a middle-aged man who's committed to not having children with some modest royalties coming in and odd jobs, you could afford like a studio attic in Paris and just sustain indefinitely with no aspiration. You don't have to put your kids through college. No. You don't have to. Yeah. You just,
and he's not traveling. Like he basically got to Paris and didn't leave. So he's not all the stuff you'd spend money on.
A city like that too. I feel that way about London where you almost never have to leave. It's so much that if you committed, like if you had to tell me, I had to choose between a peripatetic lifestyle, 3 months anywhere I wanted to go for the rest of my life, or like the rest of my life comfortable in London.
Yeah.
That would be a hard at this point in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or New York. That would be hard. It would be a hard choice, especially with children, but even putting that off the table. What would you do in that case, Brad? Would you travel every 3 months?
See, I'm always torn between these kinds of things. I mean, I think I probably would lean towards the travel, but like my trick is I need a little bit of I need to find methods for stability to write every day, you know,
and the thing about a city like London is that like, if you have a life of the mind and you want to be culturally effective and engaged, you really would never need to stray outside of that. It all comes through one way or another.
Right. Yeah. You could see music, films, museums, all kinds. Yeah. You don't have to
Entrench yourself and build a network. And so I really lean that way, even though maybe it makes me sound like I'm not that adventurous, but the way I see it is like, that would be a great, crazy adventure opposed to 3 months in a place that you can barely, here I am. I'm in Mexico City. Here I am in Buenos Aires. I mean,
you're not really building networks and relationships and things. Yeah. My push is just, I'm not that interested in urban areas anymore. So that's my trick. It's like, I always want to be in the woods.
I don't understand how this guy could be so mopey when he lived in walkable cities his entire life. Yeah,
right? Right.
He was able to bicycle everywhere. I just love the image of this derpy guy who's got these thoughts that would depress. I mean, I would put his depression against any middle American housewife on red wine and Xanax. I'm sure she has hers. And he has his, the guy who quietly goes to work in the morning and wants to blow his brains out. But the ability to articulate it and to render philosophical insights is quite unique.
Yeah.
So impressive, very interesting figure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, all right. I don't have much else.
Yeah, I don't have anything else. Patreon people, we adore you. Thank you so much for the support. Truly grateful. A lot of cool things coming. Who do we have next? What are we doing next?
We're doing Norm McDonald next week.
Norm. That's gonna be great. Yeah. We should have mentioned that on the core episode.
Yeah, that's all
a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Norm was also an aphorist.
One might say. That's true. That's well put. Yeah. It was interesting because my research in Choron and my research in Norm Macdonald started to kind of bleed together. It's like, I'm like obsessively reading Choron and then watching every Norm Macdonald video I can. This is the very weird, like,
and I'm schizophrenic now.
Right. Exactly.
All right, man. I'll see you for that.
All right.
Peace. All right. Good work. Bye.